Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
And Caroline, I gotta be honest with you. Sometimes I suggest podcast topics specifically because they apply to my life. And it gives me an excuse to get some greater insight into why I do certain things.
Okay.
I'm not talking about the douching episode. I'm talking about apologizing. Mm-hmm. I have a verbal tic, and it is saying I'm sorry.
But it's good to apologize, right?
Oh, not when I haven't actually done anything wrong.
Oh, well, what are you apologizing for?
I'm apologizing for things that happen to other people. I'm apologizing for just saying something that I might be interrupting, perhaps. I'm apologizing for really anything. Just doing the preface of, I'm sorry, but, I'm sorry if I feel like I have done anything at all that's not entirely perfect, I might just say I'm sorry. And it's something that, speaking of stuff Mom never told you, it is something that my mom, I know, does a lot, because ironically, it's a pet peeve of mine when she'll toss out an I'm sorry. If I'm talking to her about something that I'm frustrated with, and she responds, oh, I'm sorry, oh. And I say, it didn't happen to you. And then she says, well, I know. Oh, I'm sorry for saying that. And then we get into this tumbleweed of apologies. So we got to sort me out, Caroline.
Yeah. No, I, when you suggested this, I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking, like, you know, you just mentioned interrupting or just like even approaching someone in conversation and apologizing. And I don't know that I do that so much, but I guess, you know, honestly, like, this has made me want to listen to myself more closely, because usually when we do topics like this, and I'm like, I never do that. And then I go home later that day and I'm like, oh man, I've done that 17 times.
I've been catching myself doing it so much that whereas some people set up a swear jar, I would like to set up an apology jar, a pointless apology jar, because sometimes you need to apologize. But when it gets to the point of being this verbal tic, I it irks me.
Yeah.
Because I know I shouldn't be apologizing. I wonder if I should take more of the John Wayne stance, who once said, never apologize. It's a sign of weakness.
Well,
and that's the closest I can get to a John Wayne.
I think that's not true. I think it's not a sign of weakness when you mean it, when it's called for. And I don't know that I would even say that your unnecessary apologies are a sign of weakness. I think that you are a very polite person, and you don't want to come off as like being, you know, an interrupter.
Well, let's dial things back and take me out from under the microscope and do a broad brush of all of the many apology gender stereotypes. Because you already tossed out one, which is that women apologize more. And then there's that men don't want to admit that they're wrong. We assume that men avoid apologizing because of the whole John Wayne thing, because they think it's a sign of weakness.
And then, you know, speaking about women, just the idea that we're too contrite and that we're just generally more courteous than men are, and that we're making people mad when we speak up.
Yeah, or just kind of doing anything sometimes. And many researchers have said that women indeed apologize more often. There is a 1989 study that's often cited in apology literature, which was one of the seminal papers that came out saying, yes, indeed, women apologize more. But the methodology is a little iffy because essentially they had a team of research assistants keep an apology diary. And it turns out that the women research assistants documented 75% of the apologies during this given time. But most of the research assistants were women to begin with. So you didn't have exactly an equal pool.
Right. And then there's linguist Deborah Tannen, who is also often cited in apology research. And she kind of uses more of an anecdotal approach, saying that, you know, more women do this, more women want apologies, and more women offer apologies.
Yeah. And I do, though, anecdotally speaking, buy her theory that women will use apologies in the same way that I'm talking about, as almost a verbal reflex in a way that men might not, or might not as much. And she calls this our ritual way of restoring balance to a conversation. And I can totally see that in scenarios when my mom kind-heartedly responds, oh, I'm sorry, when I say, you know, something that has happened that isn't happy.
Right. And I mean, I think in that verbal reflex kind of way, if you're looking at it that way, again, it's something, you know, you're talking about wanting to overcome, but it's also another way, I think, of just saying, I'm not better than you. I'm not trying to make you feel, you know, subordinate or less than, you know, I'm not trying to trample on you. It's just, it's the type of verbal tic that you employ for better or for worse.
Well, and it could also have something to do more with female to female communication, because another linguist named Janet Holmes also says that women, yes, do a bulk of the apologizing, but we also do a bulk of the apology receiving, and that when we apologize, we often do so to women more often than to men.
And I think that's interesting, and I think that's a great, like, you segue into what we will be talking about, which is the gender, more of the gender division and what men expect versus what women expect, because, you know, if women are both giving more apologies and expecting more apologies, I mean, what is that saying? That's saying something.
Yeah, what does that say about the value of the apology? Because I also feel like if I'm constantly saying I'm sorry just for day-to-day kinds of things, when I really, truly screw up and need to say I'm sorry, has the value of my I'm sorry been diminished, if that makes sense, because of my constant apologizing?
I wouldn't think so.
Well, physiologically speaking, me apologizing to a woman might have more of a relieving or calming effect, at least according to this study from 2009 that was published in the Journal of Behavioral Medicine.
Yeah, the study found that physiologically, women respond more to apologies. Their blood pressure and heart rate variability levels returned to normal more quickly if they received an apology immediately following a verbal attack, but this was not true for men.
And the reason that men might not experience that same physiological reaction to apologies can perhaps be gleaned from a 2010 study from the University of Waterloo that changed our conversation about this gender divide, or whether there really is one, in apologies.
So we had just been talking about sort of anecdotal evidence that women apologize more, that it's more of a verbal tic for us, and that men and women have different perceptions of what apologies mean and their significance.
But then in 2010, this study came out of the University of Waterloo, and it got a ton of press because researchers said, in fact, women don't apologize more than men. Nope. When you break it down proportionally, women and men apologize the same rate. And so how they came to this conclusion is they did two separate studies. And the first study looked at gender differences in the frequency and the prompting of apologies. And indeed, women did report doling out and receiving more apologies than men. And women were also more likely, fun fact, to apologize to a romantic partner. Not that I don't do that all the time to my boyfriend.
Well, yeah, in this first study, women also reported committing more offenses. So I wonder if they're more sensitive to what they're, not more sensitive meaning that men aren't sensitive, but I wonder if they're more like, oh my God, I've done something terrible, when in fact the other party has not considered it to be terrible.
Caroline, that's exactly the case. When they went in and did a follow-up study looking at, well, why are they apologizing more? Why are they reporting more apologies? They found that women were more likely to judge an offense as apology worthy, regardless of the victim's gender. So when they broke down the numbers and looked at the apologies doled out and the types of apologies given, whether it was just like a cursory, I'm sorry, or an, I did this and I understand that you feel this way and I'm very sorry and I promise to not do that again, they found that the gender differences were completely erased in terms of apology per offense. It's just that women felt like they were doing more things that deserved apologies.
Interesting. Yeah, once men and women see things as offensive, they're both equally likely to apologize.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that says a lot about these stereotypes of women as like the submissive apologizer smoothing the waters, you know, and men being like these brutes who don't care.
Right. And it was also fascinating to see how they found no gender differences also in the manner in which men and women delivered apologies, which also debunks the stereotype about men just not wanting to admit they're wrong, or maybe if they're forced to, might mumble out and I'm sorry.
Right.
No, if we feel like we've done something wrong, we're equally likely to apologize. So the question then is, why do women have a lower threshold for offense? And if that's the case, then perhaps that's why in that 2009 study that we referenced before the break, women have a stronger physiological reaction to receiving an apology. Now that's me tying together on my own sans rigorous methodology to separate conclusions, but I wonder if they aren't related though.
Yeah, it's funny as we're going over this to think about Dude Roommate and me and how, like, there are so many times when I've been like, we need to talk, and he won't even realize that, you know, like, I will think he's mad at me, or I'll be mad at him, and he won't even realize. And he's told me more than once, you know, like, I think you're thinking more about this than I am. And it's like, oh, well, okay. It's good to, I'm the one who's more likely to be like, can we talk? I want an apology, or I owe you an apology. And he's more likely to be like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, and theorists might say that, well, that might boil down to, in conflict situations, men's evolutionary tendencies to fight or flight and women's evolutionary tendencies to tend and befriend.
Right.
So maybe we are instinctively considering the relationship a little bit more. But that study doesn't answer the question of, what's up with the verbal tick of I'm sorry, what Deborah Tannen called that ritual way of restoring balance to a conversation? Because that doesn't have so much to do with feeling like you've committed an offense and need to make up for it. This is just about just saying those two words as a way to knit a conversation together in a way.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you tell me like, oh, I had a terrible day and I lost my bag and I did this, people were rude to me, I might say, I'm sorry. You know, and that's me just expressing sympathy and trying to sympathize and empathize with you to let you know that I'm listening.
Yeah. And in the book, I Was Wrong, The Meaning of Apologies by Nick Smith, he looks into this gendered aspect of apologies and cites Sandra Barksky's phenomenology of gendered emotions. And she argues that women actually experience more shame. And so perhaps if that is the case, then we are more likely to use that apologetic language.
Yeah, and looking at this, like reading her definition of shame, she says it's a species of psychic distress occasioned by a self or a state of the self apprehended as inferior, defective, or in some way diminished. Reading that, you know, I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, I don't necessarily apologize very much. Like, I just stick to when it's really, when I've offended someone. No, I mean, I do, like, thinking about the way that, like, I might approach you for a big favor or something along those lines. And I will, like, literally, I feel like sometimes make myself physically smaller and be like, ooh, Kristen, I'm sorry. Could you, ooh, I hate to do this, but, you know, things like that, prefacing what I need or want from someone else with like, ooh, I hate to put you out.
Exactly. I can tell when I'm on a tear of I'm sorry's that I'm feeling insecure, that it's coming out of a place of uncertainty and maybe some anxiety. And it's almost like a self-soothing measure to do that. And it's all about, in a way, status, which came up in this study on apologies in the workplace. And it came out in June 2013. And it was called, Do You Really Expect Me to Apologize? The Impact of Status and Gender on the Effectiveness of an Apology in the Workplace. And it found that the most effective apologies come from people of higher status. So if you get an apology from your manager, you know it's the real deal a lot of times. That makes you feel a lot better rather than one of us having to apologize to one of our managers. Apologizing up usually does much less, I feel like, than getting the apology from on high.
Well, it's interesting that you used the word status and higher status because the same also applies for apologies from men.
Yeah, they found that in addition to apologies from managers feeling quite significant and effective, those that come from men and that are delivered to women are also considered the most effective apologies because the researchers think that it's all about expectations. The less we expect an apology, the more significant it feels when we actually get it.
Right.
And because of the gender stereotypes around apologies, we don't expect men to be forthcoming with an I'm sorry, so that when they apologize to us, we're like, oh my, okay.
No problem. Here are some muffins I made. I'm sorry if you don't like them.
That's perfect. Yeah, it's kind of amazing to think how an apology can just smooth things over so much when it's genuine.
Exactly. But with that status issue, that was one reason why over at Jezebel, Karen Polowatzik says that women need to stop with the apologizing, especially that kind of verbal tick, because she argues that it just undercuts our status over and over again. She says, I think it's that women are expected to be exceptionally grateful for the crumbs tossed our way, and so we show our gratitude by cushioning our wants with a series of, I know this is asking a lot, but, and I hate to ask, but, I might sound like an idiot for wondering, but, kinds of things. And all of that is tied into, obviously, the constant apologizing.
I agree with her on the level that constantly being like, oh, Kristen, I'm sorry, but would you mind? Like, I understand that is very undercutting. But I think for me, my opinion is that the opposite is true for when it is a genuine, concise apology. If I come to you and I say, Kristen, I'm really sorry. I dented your car. Let me fix this. Like that is taking control. I'm taking responsibility for something and kind of clearing the air. I'm not as much being like, oh, no.
Exactly. Because in that case, you are apologizing for something specific that
right.
you did that was out of line with my car, Caroline. Whereas, you know, what Karen's talking about is more in terms of that verbal cushioning. Mm-hmm. Although there might be some empowerment, some social science suggests, in refusing to apologize.
This is interesting.
Yeah, this was reported on by Shankar Vedantam over at NPR, and he talked about some research done by a trio of academics, and they found that willfully not apologizing yields a sense of empowerment and integrity.
Yeah.
But there's a limit to it. If you just never apologize for anything, you're kind of a jerk. No, actually, you're just a jerk. But in certain times when you put your foot in the ground and say, no, actually, sorry, not sorry, then it almost elevates our status, at least in our minds.
Yeah, absolutely. That feeling of self-worth, because, I mean, you know, using the preface self, I mean, it's kind of self-righteous as well. You kind of feel like, well, no, I'm better than all of you. I'm right. You're wrong. I'm not apologizing.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like if maybe I could do a better job of weeding out those mm-hmm. unnecessary I'm sorrys, I bet I would derive a sense of empowerment from that, of simply asking or saying what I mean without having to go ahead and ask forgiveness before I even do it.
Right, exactly. And then, I don't know, I feel like prefacing something by apologizing, the person that you're asking is like, oh God, what? Oh
yeah.
No, what is she going to ask?
They're prepared to disagree with you.
Right. Exactly. Yes, exactly. Because yeah, it's almost like you've gone ahead and devalued what you're about to say.
Exactly. But there is another facet of receiving the apology, of being on that receiving end of the I'm sorry, when perhaps it's not coming from someone that we don't expect it from. There was a study that came out of the Rotterdam School of Management at Erasmus University, which found that apologies a lot of times, more often than not, probably out of those workplace settings, leave us wanting.
Yeah, you might think that if you are wronged, an apology will make you feel so much better. If she would just apologize, if he would just say, I'm sorry. But they did these studies that had, you know, something happened to a person and then they received an apology, an actual apology, and then just imagining that they received the apology. And the people who imagined the apology were like, oh, I would feel so much better. But the people who actually received the verbal apology were like, yeah, well, I guess it's good they said it.
But even though apologies themselves can sometimes be underwhelming, one of the co-authors, David DeKramer, said that they're still crucial because they, quote, trigger a highly scripted reconciliation process. And that's the thing about apologizing, is that saying I'm sorry, promise I won't do that again, is only the start of the apology.
Right. It's an apology is the first step towards mending a broken relationship. It restores a kind of social order. And there was one, who was the writer? Was it like a, I feel like it was kind of an etiquette writer who said that the failure to accept an apology turns the victim into the transgressor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So if I do something to you and I apologize for it, but you're still really like PO'd and you don't accept my apology, that makes you into the rude person.
It's true.
I feel like I've experienced this situation before, but I'm on both sides, like stalked away and been like, well, that's their problem.
I have probably apologized for not accepting an apology before. It's true. But it's interesting though that, Tom Jacobs, writing at Pacific Standard, says that we are living, and other people have said this too in these, this apology literature that we looked at, that we live in a culture of apologies, whether it's just the interpersonal apology or something as massive as setting up truth commissions and having government apologies for atrocities that have happened in the past. It's our way. He says that apologizing has evolved into a nuanced ritual, so much so that these academic disciplines are developing around, well, what are we actually doing when we're apologizing? Does it really do anything? It's a script that we follow a lot of times, but it changes so much depending on status, gender, what we really mean when we say I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you have somebody like Anthony Weiner who just keeps taking it out and taking pictures of it and then apologizing. I mean, it's like, we're like, okay, he messed up again. Let's have the press conference where he apologizes. It's like, why is the apology and his press conference more important than the fact that he's a total sleazeball?
Well, that, though, gets into the issue of the non-apology.
Right.
And I would say that in the apology spectrum, the worst you can do is deliver the non-apology, because you're going through the motions of an apology, but you don't really mean it. And usually it's pretty obvious that it's a non-apology.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that a lot of times the recipient of a non-apology feels only more violated.
Oh, sure. Well, I've done it. I've made non-apologies and I've received non-apologies. And usually when I'm making a non-apology, like using an if statement or I'm sorry that you feel mm-hmm. this way, it's because I consider the other person's view to be inaccurate, incorrect, whatever. And so I tend to not use non-apologies unless I do want to make it clear that I completely disagree with you over whatever the topic is.
No, Caroline, you should then put your foot down and not apologize at all.
I know.
Then you could get that sense of integrity and empowerment.
Yeah, I could feel better.
And then not have to circle back around and apologize for the non-apology. Although I was amused to find that Hebrew University of Jerusalem Assistant Professor of Communications, Zohar Kampf, outlined 14 different types of non-apologies in a 2008 article. And I believe that he found these different brands of non-apologies by reading public apologies from either CEOs or government leaders.
Yeah.
Basically people who had done wrong and had to apologize once they had been caught.
Especially people in the financial sector who basically caused the recession. And when they were giving statements, they said things to the effect of like, I'm sorry at people's losses. I'm sorry about people's misfortunes, instead of I'm sorry for wrecking the economy.
Yeah, taking actual responsibility.
Right.
And one thing that jumped out at me from his research was he said that referring to an offensive action as a mistake is a type of non-apology, because by just calling it a mistake, you are minimizing your guilt.
Yeah,
you're saying, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, you shouldn't be mad at me.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to do it.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, everybody hurts.
Exactly. So not to close with an apology, but I realized that in a lot of ways I have co-opted this episode, but I couldn't get enough of this research because it was so enlightening to dissect why we apologize so much and the purposes that it serves, especially in the context of making the apology just to apologize.
Yeah, and I think the people who do so, whether male or female, do tend to be the people who want to smooth things over.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to ruffle feathers or they want to reassure you that, you know, they don't mean any harm by what they're doing. And so, and I also think that, you know, a lot of those apologies of like, oh, I'm sorry you had a bad day, or I'm sorry that, you know, it rained on your parade.
Yeah, and that's expressing concern, and I don't see anything wrong with that at all. It's more when it ties into the status and power issue that I want to adjust my apologizing behavior. But to answer the question of whether men or women apologize more, it is clear that women do apologize more, mm-hmm. but we got to keep in mind that it's because we find more things that we do apology worthy. And so maybe that's what we should think about in terms of, well, why do we think that this is an offense worthy of an apology?
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry, ladies. How about that?
How about not sorry at all?
So who can relate to me? I know I have apology happy friends out there listening. Please write in momstuff@discovery.com. And if you have tried to weed out excessive apologies in your life, I want to hear all of your stories. You can email them to us. You can also tweet us at momstuffpodcast or send us a Facebook message as well. And we've got a couple of Facebook messages to share with you when we come right back from a quick break.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to our letters.
So we've got a couple of Facebook messages here on our episode on women in true crime. And the first one is from Courtney. And she writes, "I'm a closeted true crime fan, although closeted no more, Courtney. I remember watching Rescue 911 as a kid and being utterly fascinated. I prefer the victim-centered, I survived types of things over stories with tragic endings by far, but I do read and watch those as well. Honestly, I've creeped myself out more than once wondering what the H is wrong with me that I'm interested in this stuff. Through my soul searching, I've discovered a definite desire to hear how people, not just women, ended up in the circumstances they found themselves in, how they got out of those situations, and what happened to the perpetrator. I suppose I feel more empowered thinking through potentially threatening circumstances, and my hope is that if the unthinkable should ever happen, I would be calmer and better equipped to deal with it. Who knows if it would when it came right down to it, but I think it actually helps me sleep better at night, knowing, thinking, hoping I've processed through the worst case scenario. Anyway, great show again. I was a little nervous that it would be, what is wrong with you psychos type of episode. But as usual, I was pleasantly surprised to hear your, I get it, even if I don't approach. Thanks, ladies. And thank you, Courtney.
Okay, I have a message here from Katrina. She says, I'm a woman and I started getting interested in true crime my senior year in high school because the mentor I was working with for my senior project had two search and rescue dogs, one of which was a cadaver dog, a dog trained specifically to locate dead bodies. I kept reading more and more about that, which led me to anthropology, specifically forensic anthropology and Dr. Bill Bass. It's now kind of spiraled out of control. Winky face. I love trying to solve the mystery if I don't know the case and or gather some clues as to why this person committed this crime. If you were to look at my bookshelf, you would think I was nuts. Anyway, the real reason I wanted to write is that I hate that women have to call something a guilty pleasure. Why do we, as women, have to feel guilty about liking something? I also wanted to touch on crime in media and non-white women. Many crime TV shows actually have a diverse background of women and men who are victims. Yes, there are probably more white women than not, but shows like Criminal Minds and CSI have had many episodes and cases that dealt with non-white women. So I wonder if it is just printed material that is this way? You mentioned Law & Order SVU, and many of the crimes on that show are taken from real cases. And Katrina goes on to say that she really doesn't like romance novels, and that part of the reason I read mystery slash true crime slash crime is that because I like solving mysteries, but also many times the woman in the books doesn't mind kicking butt every once in a while. So thanks for the message, Katrina.
And thanks to everybody who's written in. You can message us on Facebook like Courtney and Katrina did. You can also follow us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast. Email us, MomStuffAtDiscovery.com. And for some fun stuff, we are on Instagram at StuffMomNeverToldYou, as well as on Tumblr at StuffMomNeverToldYou.tumblr.com. And of course, we are on YouTube. Head on over and check out our channel. It's youtube.com/stuffmomnevertoldyou. And don't forget to subscribe.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. As a Netflix member, you can instantly watch TV episodes and movies streaming directly to your computer, tablet, mobile device, or gaming console.
Get a free 30-day trial membership. Go to netflix.com/mom and sign up now.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.